Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
I have some questions inside of me that I need to express to set my spirit free. It's all about how we hurt each other, being dishonest and not loving as God has made us to be. When we realize that this is going nowhere, we're all part of the destruction we see. If we want this rain of hate to stop falling, we must pray, God, let it begin in me. Where is God in all of this when we're hurting each other and never acknowledge what we do? Where is God in all of this when we never ask forgiveness?
And hello, everyone. My name is April Klein. You're listening to the All Things April radio show. And that was my good friend Vonda Guzman, who was singing her latest song, Where is God? And she wrote that song specifically for the killings in Aurora, Colorado. But I thought it was very appropriate to play today, as this is World Suicide Prevention Day, September 10th. Every year, get together and do a radio show and dedicate it in memory of my son, Daniel, who died in 2000. Sorry. And everyone else who has lost a child or a mother or a father or a brother or sister. To suicide. My son died 12 years ago. His birthday is September 11th. And he would be pretty old right now. But I'm not shopping for a birthday card for him. And I didn't forget to mail his gift, because I'm not going to be spending the day with him tomorrow, because I don't get to spend my days with him anymore. When my son died, he was 18 years old, and he'd had a very long battle with depression. And the choice that he made affected us, the entire family, for generations to come. It's not just me whose heart broke that day on August 30th in 2000, but every person who loved him and who knew him, and every life he would have touched if he had lived. I miss him every day, and I dedicate this radio show, especially today, to Daniel and to everyone who has struggled with depression, and those especially of us who have survived the death of a loved one. You know, I had a little crying jag before we went live on the air, and I thought I got some of this out of my system, but I was wrong. As you know, grief takes many forms, and it ebbs and flows, and it just kind of hit me. Fonda's song is particularly moving to me, and she's been a great blessing in my life, And I have to plug this song because I just love it. And you can find her song at lifeissobeautiful.net. And later I'm going to play another song of hers. In the meantime, I am so honored to have two of my heroes with me today. My guests are all too familiar with the pain of losing a child to suicide. I first saw them on the Oprah Show in 1999. I ordered the yellow ribbon cards and the little pin, and I got involved even before my son had taken his life. I've worked and listened and been amazed by the depth of compassion and ceaseless, tireless dedication to the cause that Dale and Dar Emmy have chosen to dedicate their lives to. They lost their son, Mike, in 1994, and they are with me today. Dale and Dar, welcome to the show.
Hi, April. Glad to be here.
Hi, April. Thank you for inviting us.
I'm so happy and honored to have you here, and I want to tell everyone that you are the founders of the Yellow Ribbon Suicide Prevention Program, which can be found at yellowribbon.org. So I know we were just talking before the show about tears and how they just sort of come up and catch us off guard. How are you guys doing today?
We've already had our time to cry. Then we took a shower and cried a little bit more, because it's always a hard time. We lost our Mike. Yesterday was his anniversary. We lost him on September 8th. Saturday was our anniversary. We lost him on September 8th. Mm-hmm. And so it's a tough time of the year. We sympathize with you and with everybody else who... It's a day of remembrance, but it can be both good and bad. You have good memories and sad memories. But we're doing good. We're doing good because of a lot of people that support us and support our program.
Definitely.
Yeah.
One thing to jump in with is, with it having been the anniversary date, losing Mike just this Saturday, a lot of times what happens is the fear of what you're going to feel like or what you're going to go through tends to be more of the emotional buildup than the actual day. So we've made a point, and we always tell everybody else, that when the birthdays come up and the anniversary dates come up, they're days to just not plan something big. Plan it as it comes along, and if it has to change at a moment's notice, that's cool.
Yeah.
And it helps through both of them.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's really, really true. And isn't it interesting that we have all of this going on and September 10th being World Suicide Prevention Day? The timing is just uncanny, I think.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. It still stuns me when I think about it. We got to be in a very kind of distant place, but nonetheless involved with, when the national strategy was formed, starting with Dr. Satcher from his call to action, to most recently with the Action Alliance, and we're part of what is called the National Council for Suicide Prevention. So to still see the efforts of this nation and then other nations to recognize this situation that affects so many people's lives, and that suicide, we're taking it out of the dark ages of stigma and superstition to more of that it really is a public health concern. And just like any of the other illnesses, depression and other issues like that are just as valid and just as needing support. So to be able to have people take action for suicide prevention, I know, and we can't bring our boys back, but we can certainly not let their voices not be heard, because if they could have, they would have carried on, but they just couldn't. The pain overwhelmed them.
Yes. And isn't suicide not wanting to end your life necessarily, but about ending pain?
That's it, exactly. And a lot of people don't get that, because I think they haven't experienced that kind of pain, but people say, well, suck it up or be strong or pull up by the bootstraps, but still we're human. And in today's world, professionally, it's called stacking. for us, right from the beginning, it was like the straw that broke the camel's back. We're human.
Yeah.
We're human hearts. And sometimes life gets bigger than we are, and we can't carry it by ourselves. I do apologize to everybody. I've got a really healthy taste of laryngitis today because I have fall allergies. So I'm really okay. I just don't have much voice.
Okay, so Dale, you're up. You're going to have to talk a little bit more.
Not a problem. Yeah.
So
when I get started, it's hard to get me to stop. So, this is a time for all of us to not just remember our own, but also kind of one thing is to look forward to what's happening right now. Today is actually also the announcement, the press releases and all that thing for the new revision, the update of the national strategy, which organizations across the country and agencies of the federal government and state governments all over are saying, okay, now here's what we need to do today to all of us, not just professionals, but us as individuals, us as survivors, to be able to speak up and say, I want to be a part of helping make sure that people are safe. Kids are safe. Adults are safe. Seniors are safe. People of all kinds.
And with that note, I meant to put a little reminder out, so I'll do it now, that if you are feeling suicidal or you know someone that is, please call 1-800-273-TALK or 8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. So we want to make sure that people understand we're not mental health professionals. We are just parents and advocates for prevention and awareness, and we are not therapists, and we would prefer that you call someone that can help you.
And the Lifeline, 800-273-TALK, is an amazing, powerful group of people, dedicated people, who are what you just identified. They are the professionals that can actually and absolutely help somebody get through that point in their life, as well as those of us who are worried about those who were worried are going to take their life or in that depressive state. And you know, April, earlier you said we are your heroes, and that always just kind of takes our breath away. But I got to commend you for keeping on. It's individuals and people like you, people like us. It's the survivors and those who care about suicide and suicide prevention that are continuing to make a difference in the world. So I want to congratulate you, April. Granted,
thank you.
We belong to a fraternity that we wish we'd never had to join, you,
yes,
us, and so many other families. But the fact that it's courage. I admire your courage, April, to keep going.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I want to thank everybody that's on Facebook right now sending me good energy and positive thoughts. And to the people who are holding online here, I'm not going to be taking any calls today. You're welcome to hang on and listen. But, we're not mental health professionals. And, you know, I don't know if you found yourself in this position, but, you know, as soon as my son died and word got out, people started coming to me and asking me for advice. And I didn't really have any advice. I was devastated. And I've learned over the 12 years, actually really because of Yellow Ribbon, how to manage someone who's in crisis, you know, by directing them to the professionals. Again, 800-273-TALK, that's 8255. And, you know, letting the people that know how to manage this, you know, really to handle it. But you have the Yellow Ribbon, you have a big event this week. This is Yellow Ribbon Week, isn't that correct?
Yes, it is. And actually we have Yellow Ribbon is chapters, program sites, schools, clubs all over the country, and in fact other countries as well. But we have a lot of events going on nationally, everything from walks to car washes to school presentations. The list just goes on with everything from California, where Carol's doing things, Minnesota, Barb Smith in Michigan, and Tammy Richardson in New York, and Matt Israel in Wisconsin. I don't want to forget anybody's name because we have chapters all over the place, and many, many of those are survivors who are not just healing themselves, but they're out there helping the other people know what's going on. And the whole week is about awareness, and awareness that we all can make a difference. Our Australian chapters are doing a whole bunch of different things. Our chapter in Ireland is Dr. Cassidy is phenomenal. He actually has a group of people who, and he is a professional, so he has an entire team of professionals working with the volunteers who actually go to sites where the kids gather and have therapists available just to be there if somebody needs to talk. Because our key phrase in the ribbon is that it's okay to ask for help, and we teach people how to be a link. So if somebody needs to know something, you know, they're there. And it's like Dr. Cassidy always says, he has a mobile unit that goes, you know, is out on Saturday night. And they basically have hot coffee, donuts for people, kids especially, the people of all ages, that if they just want to talk. And a lot of times we all need to know that sometimes we don't need that full-blown assistance. Sometimes we just need the help of a friend who's going to be able to listen. And that opens the door to getting people the help if they really need something more.
And you know, April, you mentioned after you lost Daniel that people immediately started coming to your advice for you for advice. And I understand that same thing happened to us. But also what I found over the years is starting then, right then, is that people knew we weren't professionals, but what we got a lot of and still do are parents who are survivors. And it's like, how do I wake up tomorrow morning? When can I laugh again? I feel guilty about laughing.
Yeah.
I feel guilty about, you went through all those things too. So there's, and I know you have this, but there's a lot of times that parents and survivors, not just parents, come to us and say, how do I get through to tomorrow? So no, we're not, you and I and Dale are not professionals in the sense of therapy, but truly what I have found is that we provide a very intricate and valuable piece of survival by showing others how to take that next step, how to look tomorrow in the face. I mean, others did that for us. A lady here in Denver, Vivian Epstein, she runs a survivor support group for parents of suicide loss, and she was, oh gosh, she was so helpful to me so many times because I just didn't know what my next step was. I've never heard the phrase new normal. I was struggling. I was struggling with the fact that my normal life had totally been wiped out. And then when she explained about new normal and how you find new steps and new routines and new, that gave me something that I could build on. So that's what I mean, April, when I talk about you and your courage to go on. Yes, we are not therapists, but don't sell yourself short about how much you do for people when you tell them it's okay to have a cup of coffee and to cry and laugh at the same time.
Yes, that really is true. I mean, I remember having that exact question as well. I felt so guilty the first time I laughed after my son had died. I felt, I was like, oh, what have I done? Oh, I'm not supposed to laugh. I'm supposed to be grieving.
Exactly. You feel guilty, and it goes over and over and over. And the important thing, too, is that this is okay for guys. I can talk from the guy standpoint that it's important that the guys realize those feelings as well. And they may come out differently. People that know me, I'm a very mild-mannered kind of guy, unless I'm pushed, unless somebody disses somebody in my family or Mike or the program. But there was a time not too long after Mike died that we had a freezer that conked out. And a couple members of the family stepped outside to find me taking a sledgehammer to the darn thing. And I just beat it to pieces. And a couple other guy members of the family were far enough away to not get close to the sledgehammer, but close enough that they could pull the pieces of the freezer away. And they just let me beat it up because they knew I was safe, and they knew that they were close enough to be safe. And it's like we all need to find, you know, if we get to that point with something, what is it we need to do? Do we need to write? Do we need to beat something up? Hopefully we don't beat somebody up. That's not cool. But
no, no, we don't want that.
His beating up the freezer story is legend in our family. We laugh about it now.
You know, I've never heard that one. I've known you guys since 1999. I've never heard that story.
He's feeling more comfortable about admitting it, shall I say, in public. The family all knew it, and friends who were, because we were surrounded right from the get-go, and there were a couple of people that were professionals that were over there that day just having coffee, and they said, let him do it, because it's cathartic. And he just it was an 18-cubic-foot freezer, old, out in the garage, and it was full of ice, you know the whole story. And when he died and they drug it out, and it just, something in him, and it was interesting to watch him beat that thing. I mean, it was flat as a pancake when he was done.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know that anger too. So, Dale, I sympathize. It just cracks me up. And here we are talking about, is it okay to laugh? What is our new normal? When a loved one dies, particularly of suicide, you definitely have a new normal. You have to redefine your whole family. You have to redefine your own worth. As a parent in particular, I found myself, and I struggled with this for years. It's been 12 years, but for me, it's just sometimes it feels like 5 minutes. And I still find myself judging myself and saying, you know, I wasn't a good enough mother. I wasn't enough this. I should have known. I should have this. I should have. And, you know, I know also because of time, and this is the advice that I would give to any other mother or father that, you know, or sister or brother, you know, that you don't know. You don't know. You don't know all things. People have sides to their personality, and sometimes they're so good at hiding their depression that you would never guess that they would do that. And that is what has happened to so many people that I know.
Yeah, and it's so important to know that, you know, that kind of thing happens to everybody who's lost somebody. And the big thing is that I should have this, I should have that. There's a phrase out there that we use a lot. DAR is very good at making sure that every survivor parent that we meet knows it. But somebody told us early on, don't should on yourself. And
yeah.
Tell me that I'll make sure I say it right. It's don't should on yourself. And it's one of the things that after a while, it's just kind of, it is so powerful because it allows you to move to that next step and to enjoy. And the minute you feel guilty for laughing or crying, try to remember that you were laughing with your loved one for many years before that final day, that final moment. And it's important to continue doing that. You're honoring them. And that ties into something else, is that that Dar and I have never been angry at Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that is very important for parents to know. It's sometimes people are, and anger is a part of that grief process.
Sure.
But we've never been angry at Mike. We've been angry at it, at suicide, at what took him down, what takes down the other members of other people's family. Because that is the thing that we need to be angry at, is the thing that we've either not been told to watch for or the thing we couldn't watch for. And it's helped us a lot. We actually have survivor parents that we've worked with over the years who were therapists. One of the most highly recognized therapists here in Denver helped us work on our state plan for prevention and everything. Was actually a therapist helping other suicidal patients who lost his mother at one point to suicide.
Oh my gosh.
It hurt a lot for all of us, for him, because we knew him, but it also was very empowering years later when he was able to say, look, this is not something that any of us should feel personally guilty for, although we can't take that guilt away. It's going to be there. But,
Yeah.
So,
and I just want to say also that, you know, in this world, I talk about the disconnected connected. Our cell phones and the internet and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all of that stuff. But, you know, like a lot of people listening to the show right now, they're probably really struggling with depression and feelings of self-loathing and low self-worth, self-esteem. And to them, what do we say to them? How do we extend the salvation that they are so desperately looking for? How do we do that?
The one thing, when somebody asks me directly that question, the biggest thing is, number one, just try to stay connected to that person. Find out who else around them can stay connected to them. Mm-hmm. But also, in staying connected to them, asking them direct questions like, what do you like to do? What can I do to help? Is there somebody else around you that you enjoy being with?
Mm-hmm.
Asking the questions that are very pointed, that sometimes for all of us are like, oh my God, I don't want to ask that question because it might bring up the yes answer.
Right.
Are you depressed? Are you thinking of harming yourself? Have you considered suicide? Do you have a plan? All of those things are scary, but if we're worried about somebody and we ask those questions, we break through that isolation that they feel. Dr. Bergman wrote a book, Kids on the Brink, years ago, and he said that when people are at the point of harming themselves, they feel in a total isolation, even if they have a wonderful relationship with everybody around them.
Yeah.
Depression, stress, pain, all of the emotional pain, all of those things can cause us to feel isolated. And by asking questions and encouraging people to contact someone and letting them know you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the key thing, isn't it? That everyone, none of us are alone. We really need to remember that. And especially during a crisis, it is hard. It's difficult to reach out and to ask for help. But that's one of the things that Yellow Ribbon strongly encourages, is it's okay to ask for help. And you have cards that actually say that. I want to use my Yellow Ribbon card.
Yeah. The front of the card has a ribbon on the front and tells people that it's okay to ask for help, and who to reach out to, parent, teacher, counselor, friend, doctor, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
And the back of the card is the thing that says, if somebody hands you a card, that it's okay to stay there with them. It's okay to be there. It says, stay, listen, and get help. But don't try to isolate. Don't try to keep it to yourself. Connect them with somebody that they need to connect with. Do they need to connect with a parent, with a member of the clergy, a faith person? Do they need to get connected with mental health or whoever? Do they need to help them bridge to somebody in their family? Whatever the connection is, being a link, and we always encourage people, we don't try to be a counselor. Being a counselor means you're going to analyze things, and that's what the professionals need to do. The Yellow Ribbon, as Dara said for years and years, is across this country we have people that are like the Grand Canyon. On one side you have people who need help, and on the other side of the canyon you have the professionals who want to help. And what Yellow Ribbon has been all these years, and remains and will always be, is that bright yellow bridge to help people get the help, bridge to help they need, no matter what that level of help may be.
Yes. And so if someone is feeling suicidal and you come across them, what are those three things again? You said it's kind of like stop, drop, and roll. If there's a fire, it's stay with them.
Yeah, it's like when the fire is down on the inside, and it's stay, listen, and give help. It's okay to stay with somebody unless there's risk of harm to yourself. Stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is to listen. So many times we don't listen for an answer. And it's like I tell all the groups, we as parents many times ask a question of our kids, and then we start asking another one and another one and another one, or making statements, and what we need to do is to listen. It's okay to say, what's happening in your life? Is there something I can do to help?
Mm-hmm.
Is there somebody we can go talk to? Would you go, would you like me to go with you if I help set up something for you to talk to somebody? Who would you like to go talk to? And, on and on, making those connections. But each time, let the person give you an answer before you move on. That's so important. And you know, after Mike died, before he died, actually, he reached out to a number of his friends, and we don't fault any of them for not calling up and saying, hey, but nobody had ever told them it's okay to stay on the phone, to listen to them, to call somebody and say, hey, Mike's not sounding too good tonight. You know, you might want to check on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've heard that over and over again about people feeling guilty after losing a friend or loved one that they didn't do something ahead of time. But many times in our society, we've not been told we can even talk about suicide. So to follow it up and with that, like a back of our card say, stay, listen, and get help. And the get help part is to connect that person with who they need to be with at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's parent, whether it's counselor, whether it's therapist, faith leader, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It might be. Many times, especially with youth, they're finding out that the what do you call it, the important time,
mm-hmm.
sometimes 45, peak time, is many times 45 minutes to 2 hours. So we're not talking necessarily many times, but getting people to help. So it's
and they can, and people listening can get this card at yellowribbon.org. And these cards are they downloadable now, or do you just you go in and place an order? How does that work?
Actually, both. It's set up so that, you know, we've got it set up online so that, you know, kids can go download a page of them if they want to. And we have many people who go in and get break, you know, perforated cardstock, and we'll print them on both sides locally if they need them right then. But they can also order them from us.
That's fantastic.
They can order us, you know, online, whatever it works for them.
That is fantastic. I remember in 1999 when I saw it, it was 1999, you were on the Oprah show, right? That was
yes.
Yeah, and I remember watching that show, and, you know, my son had been in and out of treatment, and, of course, I was, you know, riveted. And I went, I don't think, did we have websites back then? I don't remember. I think there was. I know, it's like 1999 seems like 100 years ago right now. So.
Yeah.
But I think I went and I printed out some and then just cut them and just, like, yeah, handed them to people, and particularly my son. And yeah, and, you know, encouraged him. And then I ordered some, and then, of course, I got involved with Yellow Ribbon. And I think you guys were the first person I contacted officially, you know, in terms of an organization after my son died, and got involved with that. And the every year there's a memorial at in December. Right now the words are escaping me. Help me. It's the memorial, the memorial tree.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You kind of broke up. Will you say it again, April?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, the internet, sometimes it breaks up the whole conversation. I was saying how, you know, you have the memorial Christmas tree, for lack of another word, or certainly could just be a holiday tree, and the yellow ribbons that are on it for each name. Each person who has died in that particular chapter. So
that's,
I used to work with. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You've got.
Oh, I was
going to
say that I was working with the Maryland chapter, the chapter here in Maryland, and Mary McCausland, and she was the chapter president, and so I, you know, we worked hard, and we made little angels and everything as well, and. You know, we try to take everything in, and it is hard work, but it is a way of healing yourself as a survivor by giving back to others. You heal your own wounds. But yeah, I'm so grateful that you guys put together these chapters. Now you're worldwide, is that correct?
Yes, we actually are in every state of the United States, every province of Canada, and 47 foreign countries.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's, we keep telling everybody that Dale and Dar, we know who we are. We're the founders, and we understand that, and we respect that. But really, in reality, we're so humbled and so grateful and so blessed to have folks like you and people who have started chapters and program sites and clubs. Dale and Dar are the smallest part of Yellow Ribbon. It's all of the people who have come together to really join their voices and really make a difference. So it is worldwide, and it's amazing. I mean, we have Francis Lolinga over in Zambia, Africa. I mean, the list goes on, and Singapore and Indonesia and India, and, I mean, we're humbled each day when we hear from people about how our little program has reached out and touched others' lives. And we know that we're only stewards. Dale and I get it. We're only the stewards mm-hmm. of a program that has a much higher purpose and came from a much higher source.
Yes, absolutely. And you've been doing this since 1994. And you go into schools and talk mostly with kids. Is that right?
Yes, it really started out mostly with kids, and it still is primarily with kids, but we do a lot of adult presentations now because so many more adults are aware and are worried for their families. We'll be mm-hmm. in Shawano, Wisconsin in October for a mm-hmm. week doing work up in those areas, and we'll be out in eastern Colorado at Bennett, Colorado on Wednesday. So, yes, we are still on the road a lot and very involved, you know, at the ground level, and that's just exactly how we like it.
That's remarkable. And the suicide rate with teens, is what is that rate? I know there's a suicide every 40 seconds, but what is the teen rate?
Well, we're still at that awful rate of teens, 15 to 24, I mean, it doesn't just encompass teens, but that young adult, 15 to 24, we're still the highest rate. Suicide's the second leading cause of death. And unfortunately, right now, the stats show that still, for every reported suicide attempt, there's 100 to 300 unreported attempts. For every suicide death, mm-hmm. there's at least 200 unreported suicide deaths. So nobody really has a handle on how big this situation really is. But for teens 15 to 19 in some areas of the United States, it's a leading cause of death. So the numbers are still staggeringly high. And you know what? People have said to not just us, but to other suicide prevention action groups, if you're doing so much work, why are the numbers still so high and seem to be climbing? Actually, one of the things that's happening is reporting is getting better, but we're bringing it out from behind the curtain. People mm-hmm. are acknowledging suicide, depression more. So mm-hmm. the numbers are high really because they're getting reported more than they ever have. You know, it's like I teach in my class that we know suicide, that it has stigma. People won't talk about it because of stigma. But there's a shadow word to the word suicide, and a lot of people don't realize that. That it's not about just being in denial or being a blockhead or being stubborn, but that shadow word is called superstition, and it goes clear to the root of a person's being. And when we grow up with a thing that we're not supposed to, well, another side of that is how, as kids, have we heard, you know, I got some good news, but I don't want to tell anybody because I don't want to jinx it. Well, this is kind of same thing, just kind of the other side of the coin that, or in more modern and some new age thought, it's like name it and claim it. So a lot of people won't say the word suicide, won't talk about it because they don't want to name it to claim it. But what we're talking about is when you say suicide prevention, you're naming it, claiming suicide prevention. Mm-hmm. But just know, folks, that a lot of times when you're dealing with people, they're not really trying to be blockheads or stubborn or in denial, they're scared. That fear goes clear to the soul level because they could have been raised with that whole sense of superstition about suicide.
Yes. Yeah, I still run into that. A lot of people, people that are even very, very close to me say that, you know, what good does it do to talk about suicide? You know, aren't you just bringing on? No, I don't believe that we are. Dale, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's exactly it, because, you know, like I said earlier, there's so many professionals that will say that somebody, when people are at that point of harming themselves, they feel isolated. And if we can talk about it, if we can open the subject, It's like we have a lot of people in schools. You mentioned we go to schools and talk to kids. Mm-hmm. We also do trainings in the schools before we talk to the kids. We do training with the staff and the teachers and the counselors and the bus drivers and cooks and secretaries, because it's important for them to know how to respond to the kids if they have an issue. And many times they'll say things like, well, now you've told me how to talk to the kids here at school. How do I go home and talk to my own kids about suicide? And it brings up things like, you know, after Mike died, we went to therapy and counseling and support groups. And by the way, support groups were phenomenal help all the way around. Mm-hmm. Meeting and talking with other survivors who were going through the same thing was a rough thing to do. But if we talk about this subject, we're going to find solutions. If we hide it, we're going to hide it like every, you know, any kind of illness that's been out there or any kind of medical or issue in our country, we don't solve it by trying to pretend it's not there. Mm-hmm. If we can bring it out in the open, what's going to happen is we know of people now who are therapists, who are researchers in this field, who started out as a kid in high school or a kid in college and didn't know what to do, didn't know how to help. Mm-hmm. And they're now somebody who's actually in, you know, helping other people, counseling, mm-hmm. that type of thing. So, you know, the more that we do open up, the more that we do share with somebody that awareness is there. That's just like with, you mentioned Yellow Ribbon Week. Clear back in 1995, we started the Yellow Ribbon Suicide Awareness and Prevention Week, all of those type of things, and started it in, you know, in September, to be the second week of September. And it's now grown to become national suicide prevention. The whole idea behind it is to get awareness in each community, each school district, each state, all across the country, so that people will know that this is a subject we not only can talk about, but there's positive solutions. The more we share about what to do, the more we can solve a problem, one person, one community at a time. And it's by bringing the communities together that that it makes it happen.
Yeah, you guys really have been at the forefront of this, the catalyst behind having a national and now world, awareness of suicide and prevention for it. You've been working on this for many, many years, and you've just been slow and steady and, you know, working away tirelessly, I might add, because your schedules are crazy. So I know that you guys work really hard on this, and it is your life's work. And don't you also feel at this point that you this really is your purpose, and that, you know, it's like Dar was saying, you know, it's not a fraternity that we want to be a member of. We don't really want to welcome somebody to the World Suicide Prevention Program, but at the same time, we are here and we want to make a difference and we want those voices to be heard. So do you not feel the divine intervention here with your work here?
We definitely do. It's, you know, as a survivor who's lost a child, it mm-hmm. is very hard to say that there was a purpose in this. There's been many times it's like, oh, my God, and somebody has said, if you had her choice, would you change it? Definitely. We don't want to.
Sure.
We wouldn't want to lose Mike or any of our kids, but because it happened, we want to make a difference. We tell many people, and the story of Mike is called The Legacy of the Yellow Mustang. It's on our website. There's a story of how it started.
Yeah, I meant to ask you about that. Do you want to tell people about the Yellow Mustang and the Yellow Ribbon, how that all, the story behind that real quickly?
I should let Dar do that because she does a phenomenal job.
Well, the Mustang is such an integral part of the whole story because it really goes back to when we lost Mike. Even the day that he passed, that they started bringing us not only every yellow flower, I think, in the world. He was known for that yellow Mustang. Actually, he and Dale restored classic Ford Mustangs all of Mike's life, and that was the car that he was driving when he passed. And what happened was within 24 hours of losing him, girls were coming in the house and they had yellow ribbons tied in their hair and around their wrist and bringing yellow flowers, so that's why we chose yellow. And the story just grew from there about not only the good things he did, but that that's how he was remembered, that bright smile and that bright yellow car. So now, today, we have a goal. We want to do a Restore Hope campaign. We're working toward it, trying to raise the funds to be able to take, not only the car is being restored, but to be able to take that car and the fact that the car was restored, that we can restore our lives when we face such terrible depression or life-changing things in our lives. And we want to take that car all around the country and fill it, have people come and visit us and have different activities and events, but fill that car with handwritten messages, drawings, pictures, notes from people who have restored their life, who are restoring their life, who are giving hope to others, who were seeking hope. But we want to have that Restore Hope campaign built around the legacy of the Yellow Mustang, that it's about all of us helping each other get through this thing called life.
I love that idea. Restore Hope.
Yeah, so we call it the Restore Hope campaign, and it's built around restoring that yellow Mustang just as a symbol. It's not just about the car. It's just the symbol of being able to restore hope after life has just knocked you to your knees over and over and over.
Oh, I love that. How can people help out? Do they go to yellowribbon.org or?
Yeah, they can go to the website and connect there. They can go to our we have a Facebook page and connect and like there. It started by the youth in our group, our International Youth Council. And they basically said kids have the greatest ability to connect with other people, to get people involved. And one kid popped up and said, hey, if we all sent in a dollar, it all go toward restoration and moving and education and awareness. So
people send in donations either on the website or however they choose to do it. We have a donate button. They can say they want it earmarked for the Restore Hope campaign. And the whole campaign, and we have some brochures up on there, but people can buy miles. Other people want to put money in to help, quote, start the campaign, to be a key donator. Just everything built around the car kind of persona about getting started, finding an old rusty car in the middle of a field, in other words, symbolic of picking ourselves up in the middle of the field after we've been knocked down by a tornado or something. And little by little, we put all those pieces of our life back together. And that's what you do when you restore a car. You put all those pieces back together, and then it becomes a beautiful, powerful, living thing. I mean, to us, that car is living. But and by the way, a lot of people don't know the Mustang started with Dale. He has a classic 65 Mustang convertible. And so all of those in our lives just represent about how you just kind of keep on keeping on for others. It's different symbols. But, yes, they could donate and they could say, let's put the Restore Hope campaign on the road, because what we want to do is to have the tour come to every state in the nation to have an event. And we want it, it'll be a year-long tour that we're able to do, and different family members will travel, different Yellow Ribbon folks will travel, but it's different. We hope to have celebrities. And I have to really say that we have three really strong driving forces behind the Restore Hope campaign, and that is Chris Hansen in Nebraska, Stan Collins in California, and Anne Romero from New Mexico. She is a former Miss New Mexico. She's now serving with a congresswoman in Washington. So it is the young people who brought this idea to the table, and we want to see it through.
I absolutely love that idea, and I'm going to follow up. Getting some sponsoring going.
Well, any ideas you have, April, because you're such a beautiful, creative person, we can use all the help, not just dollars, but ideas and technical support. I mean, we need help, guys, of all different kinds, and we welcome it. So just let us know. I can give our email address if that's allowed.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
They can reach us directly at YRDEMME. It's Yellow Ribbon DME because we're Dale and Dar Emme. YRDEMME@gmail.com. And we would appreciate your help.
Yeah, because this is all run by volunteers.
And yes, it is. All of our chapters and everything. The whole program is run 99% by volunteers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that you guys have just done incredible work. I want to get this question in here real quickly. My friend Mark Ward, who lives in Chicago, hi, Mark, he posted on my Facebook wall, I am wondering if we can find a way to more effectively categorize this daunting issue rather than suicide prevention without losing focus on the important severity of the issue. The focus on prevention is directing the majority of the attention on stopping something that we don't want to happen rather than focusing on what we want to create for those in need. I don't have the answers yet, but I believe it is worthy of our attention. It is similar to the energetic difference between protesting war versus advocating peace. So what are your thoughts on this? I love it.
This is Dar first. I'm with you, April. I don't have all the answers, but I think he has a very, very valid point. And I think it would be well worth looking into and seeing if we can't energize that differently and make it more positive and more powerful.
And the important thing there is that that's something that we've done with Yellow Ribbon from day one, actually, is to try to focus that on. And that's why our Awareness Week is more than just a prevention week. Nationally, the other organizations who are now recognizing the second week of September as National Suicide Prevention Week, to us it still remains Yellow Ribbon Suicide Awareness and Prevention Week, because our number one thing is about education and the awareness. That's why we do proclamations in school districts and states and mayors and cities and governors and all that kind of thing, and that U.S. House and U.S. Senate have both recognized it as an awareness event, but an awareness process. This whole thing, Yellow Ribbon focuses on, let's put out the education to the people. Let's organize in the communities. Dar and I had a background in bringing well, crisis. It was a matter of search and rescue background being taught by the Air Force that got us involved right after Mike died. We didn't know consciously what to do. We fell back on our training that said if there's a crisis of any kind in a community, what we do is we start looking for what can we all do to help? What can this one do, that one do, the other one do? Whether it's a person, a school, a community, the faith leaders. We had a nuclear physicist one time that said, I don't know what to do, but I just want to be able to help my son. He didn't help as a nuclear physicist. He helped as a parent and advocate. And it all comes around, let's educate people on what to do, what is the problem, what are the warning signs, how can we help. Again, like your friend said, let's focus on the positive things of how to make this a better world, make this a better environment for each individual. And, definitely the prevention is right up there, but awareness, we have to be aware in order to be able to prevent.
Yes, agreed. And behind, in front of every screen and everyone listening today, are, like I had touched on earlier, we're also very connected, but we're very disconnected. There are many times where, you get a text instead of a phone call or an email instead of a card in the mail when it's your birthday or something. It seems like the personal touch has just gone by the wayside, and I think that's one of the keys to prevention, for that matter, of anything, any kind of ailment, whatever it is, because if you're connected to other people, then you're more likely to be healthier. And you'll feel more empowered to reach out and ask for help.
Exactly. And that's why, we agree. The electronic age right now, the connectedness, it's like how many of us are on Facebook and our friends. There's a whole new whole new understanding of what a friend is,
yeah,
because
exactly.
of the friend on Facebook, you know, or other social media. And we need to reach out to people. And if we get a text from somebody or whatever kind of message comes through at whatever media, is if it's not clear or if it's something we're concerned about, we need to go that extra step and say, hey, what do you mean by that? And get some dialogue going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because that helps with the connectedness. That does. Connectedness is something that is key all the way around. So as we move more and more into this electronic age, being aware of how we keep people connected and how we stay personally connected with people is more and more important. And along with the media comes all that other stuff about being embarrassed by things.
Mm-hmm.
You put too much stuff on the media, and then you get – it brings up a whole other issue, but I won't go there.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like people are going to post, hey, I'm suicidal and I'm actually going to go through with it on their status, you know. people are going to be more subtle. They're going to – maybe they're not on Facebook as much. Maybe they're quiet. Maybe they're negative or making attacks on people, you know. It's political or something. Maybe they're just in a bad mood all the time. And, you know, it would be nice if someone, you know, someone goes the extra mile and – says, hey, you know, you're having a rough time. Are you having a rough time? You know, do you want to talk? You know, because, and that's the other thing is, you know, you say we need to, you know, stop, drop, and roll. We need to listen, stay, and I should know this stuff because I work with you guys. Listen, stay, and get help. What's the best way to get help?
The first thing would be the 800-273-TALK, because that is, that's not just a number. It's the number of people who care on whatever level. And they can help you help somebody, or they can help you directly. If you're
mm-hmm.
the person or you're scared for somebody else, they can give you the connection. They can give you the resources in your community, no matter what level that may be.
Mm-hmm.
How you can help is just be aware. And just know that if you're going to deal with somebody who you're concerned about, you may be scared, but being scared, you better be scared to ask a question and go ahead and ask the question today than to be like us where you're talking and wondering what it would be, should be nice to be able to ask that question.
Yes, exactly. So the key thing here is to, if you are feeling suicidal, to call 1-800-273-TALK or 8255. And or also go to yellowribbon.org and find out how you can get involved, how you can get help, how you can participate in the Restore Hope campaign. I love that. How you can restore hope in your own life. And Dale and Dar Emmy of Yellow Ribbon, my heroes, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for inviting us. We have so enjoyed it, and we missed hearing your voice.
Thank you. Well, thank you. I'm going to call you guys later because I need to catch up with you guys. But thank you so much for being on there. And thank you so much for all the work that you do on behalf of everyone, the suicide awareness prevention. I can't say enough about you guys. I just love you so much. Really love you.
Thank you, April. And the feeling is mutual.
Thank you, April. We'll talk real soon.
Yes, we will. Thank you, Dale. Thank you, Dar, Emmy of yellowribbon.org. I want to encourage everyone to go there and take a little look, get the cards, the ribbons, and also, if you can, make a donation because this is all based on volunteers, and they do such good work. And I want to thank everyone for listening, and as I leave, I want to remind everyone to please light a candle tonight at 8 p.m. your time, whatever. Wherever you are in the world, light a candle tonight at 8 p.m. and think of how you can participate in helping others live a more peaceful life. And also, you could also post the candle from the World Suicide Prevention on Facebook. You can post that candle on this issue of prevention. So for Dale and Dar Emmy and yellowribbon.org, I'm April Klein. Thank you so much for listening. And as we leave, I'm going to play Life is So Beautiful by my beautiful friend, Vonda Guzman. Thank you so much for listening, everyone.